It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Good morning. Did you think you were going to get Ernest Hancock again today? I don't know. If you were, you were wrong again. It's Jet Lacy here on the Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock show. And I got Drew yet again coming in out of the kindness of his heart to run the board for me. I had to, I had to wake him up this morning, but it's all good. Good morning, Drew. Anyway, we're going to have hopefully an interesting show for you today. In the second hour, we're going to have a friend of mine named Ed Vallejo. He's one of the best activists that I have ever met. He's the first person I ever met in this movement. I heard him speak at the at an End the Fed rally in November, and I was so impressed. I just went to the rally as it was the first thing I ever did, and I just went to because I knew the Fed was an evil entity. I knew the Fed was a private entity by that point, but I didn't really know fully the ins and outs. Like, I've only been in the movement since then. I count that day, November, as the first thing I ever did. And then on December 15th is the Bill of Rights Day, where the Bill of Rights was ratified, and they had a big to-do over at the Wrigley Mansion. You know, like Wrigley's Gum. They built a huge mansion overlooking the Arizona Biltmore here in Phoenix. And it's a beautiful house, but what they use it now is for parties and things like that. And they had a reading of the Bill of Rights, and they had, people could get up and speak whenever they wanted and say whatever was on their mind, you know, in the true spirit of the First Amendment. And I thought it was a beautiful, beautiful day. You know, it was a nice evening, and I went by myself, and there's a whole bunch of people. I didn't know anyone, but I ended up approaching Ed that day, and I said, "Well, you know, I'm interested in getting involved. What can I do?" And he's like, "Well, it's kind of Christmas time, and there's nothing really going on, but give me your number, and I'll give you a call." So he gave me a call towards the end of the month. And he said, "Hey, let's go to the Arizona Breakfast Club. It's a club that's met since 1969, created by Harry Everingham. But now it's run by Ernest Hancock." And the first breakfast club I went to was Ernest Hancock speaking about opening up this studio that we have and this activism center. And I was like, wow, sign me up. So the next week, we started moving in, and this has been one of the most wonderful years of my life, and I'm so proud to be here, and I think that we do a lot of good work here, and I'd like to talk to Ed about, you know, all kinds of stuff, what he's up to, because he's got so many irons in the fire. Also, I'd like to speak about sort of the go on from yesterday. In the Pastor Anderson situation, about the warrantless checkpoints that they have, the constitution-free zone that we have 100 miles around our country from the borders. And for 100 miles, they can stop you without cause. And there's some people that are fighting back against that. And when we get back, we'll start talking about that. Or we'll be right back on the Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock show. We'll see ya.
There are those that just want to be left alone.
and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
We are back on the Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock Show. My name's Jet Lacy, and I'm your host today for whatever reason. It's because Ernie's not here. That's why. So anyway, we are going to be talking about the, as a sort of a caveat, as an add-on, as a progression from the Pastor Anderson issue that we were talking about yesterday, because his, you know, how he originally gained the spotlight was refusing to answer the questions and asserting his rights at one of these warrantless immigration, quote, multi-jurisdictional checkpoints that they have anywhere within 100 miles from the border. You know, a lot of these roads, they don't even intersect the border, and they still have these things that they set up. You know, sometimes it's just immigration. Sometimes it's immigration and tribal police. Sometimes it's immigration customs, tribal police, state police. There's just, it's going nuts. And that's the whole point, is people are just finally saying, hey, you know, these aren't right. Enough is enough. And there's a gentleman named Terry Bressy, who he works for the U of A at the Kitt Peak Observatory. You know, he's kind of the one, he's a person that's partially in charge of keeping us safe from killer asteroids or comets that are, you know, could potentially, you know, be bearing down on Earth from light years away. And he's just a regular guy. He lives in Tucson, and he has to travel this road, which is State Route 86, that doesn't bisect or intersect the border at any point. It is an east-west road that is 40 miles north of the border. And Terry Bressy, again, I've heard him speak the second Arizona Breakfast Club that I went to. They had Terry Bressy speaking, and I was very intrigued, you know, because usually, you know, we're taught as we're growing up, you respect authority. If the police or another member of law enforcement asks you a question, you answer it. You know, that's part of polite society. However, you know, it's sort of, they've sort of encroached on that area, many of us believe, that, you know, that would infringe on our Fourth Amendment rights. And I'm just going to read you quickly the actual text of the Fourth Amendment, which is the right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable search and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrants shall issue but upon probable cause supported by oath or affirmation. And that means, you know, the probable cause, they can't go around rooting through your business, including your papers, your person, and your place to live. You know, it should, they didn't have cars back then, but, and the judiciary has sort of watered down the Fourth Amendment to a large degree, but it doesn't matter. You know, the spirit of the Fourth Amendment is that they cannot search you without probable cause or without a warrant. But yet they're doing it. They're doing it all over the country. You know, both places I've ever lived is very, very upstate New York by the Canadian border, and here, close to the Mexican border. And when I go home to New York, they have the checkpoints in there about 45 miles, and you have to stop. And here they have them. They're not on the border. That's not the issue. At the border, they have every right. That's one of the mandates in the Constitution that the federal government is supposed to provide, is secure the borders. And they're not doing it. You know, that's the thing. They just, this is all about your, this is all about a fascist, may I have your papers, please? Show me your papers now. And, you know, there's a lot of people out there that are sort of starting to push back. Pastor Anderson's one of them. Another gentleman, Terry Bressy, is another. And he has a website called checkpointusa.org. And there's a lot of videos of his encounters with the Border Patrol. Now they're even having customs out there. And I know ICE, Immigration Custom Enforcement, is part of the same entity. But they're actually having canine teams out here at these border patrols. You know, checkpoints, warrantless checkpoints. And I wanted to sort of introduce you to this concept of what they're doing by someone that passes through these things as a matter of his employment with the University of Arizona. They all know him. You know, he goes through there on a regular basis. He lives in Tucson, works at the University of Arizona, but has to work at a off-site facility, which is called the Kitt Peak Observatory. So I'm going to play a little clip for you, and then we'll further discuss it. You got it up, Drew?
One of the concerns that a lot of proponents of checkpoints in general, be they sobriety or immigration checkpoints, have is that they consider them more efficient in order to be able to identify either drunk drivers or illegal immigrants or some other issue of concern to law enforcement. They consider a checkpoint to be an efficient use of resources. My research, however, has indicated the exact opposite. And I'll take sobriety checkpoints, for instance, because that's where the most documented data actually exists. There was a study done out of Tennessee back in the late 1990s that encompassed a three-year time frame in which suspicionless sobriety checkpoints that were being conducted throughout the state, where all the data was collected together over that three-year period and analyzed. Not only that, they are looking at statistics related to non-checkpoint operations, but that had the same goal in mind. For instance, they would compare roving patrols that were out looking for drunk drivers and only stopping people based upon reasonable suspicion of wrongdoing versus statistics associated with actual checkpoint operations where everybody who was passing through a particular geographic area was being stopped and queried. And what they found was that the roving patrol operations were far more efficient, both in the number of arrests and in the manpower used in order to remove drunk drivers from the road. Specifically, this three-year time frame, which involved hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of drivers during that time frame, they only had a 0.6% arrest rate for drunk driving. So that means 99.4% of everyone who was stopped at that checkpoint were cleared for not driving under the influence. The study did not include the number of successful prosecutions out of that 0.6% that were actually arrested at checkpoint operations. So we don't know what the final numbers were with regards to prosecutions. What they did then was then compare that 0.6% arrest rate against the arrest rate associated with roving patrols, where people were only pulled over based upon reasonable suspicion. And the arrest rate for those types of operations was 10 times higher. So there was a 6-7% arrest rate based upon roving patrols. Not only that, when they added up all the man hours associated with checkpoint operations versus roving patrols, they found that the roving patrols used 33% less man hours in order to realize a 10 times increase in the number of arrests for drunk driving. So if you want to break it down in terms of efficiency and ultimately saving lives, then roving patrols were far more effective at removing drunk drivers from the road than checkpoints ever were. And the added benefit of a roving patrol was that 99.4% of the people stopped weren't either inconvenienced because the police lacked some sort of reasonable suspicion to initiate the stop in the first place. And this study has been recreated across the country. I've been following specifically the statistics associated with Pima County Sheriff Department sobriety checkpoint operations over the past couple of years. The Sheriff's Department, they publicized their statistics online, so you can go right to the source and you can compare that to their arrest rates for roving patrols with regards to drunk drivers over the course of the past 10 years, I believe they have their statistics up.
So we even have Terry saying that, you know, at these DWI or DUI checkpoints, that only 0 points, you know, a lot of the impetus for these checkpoints not only are immigration, they're also for DWIs and DUIs, and they sort of just lump this catch-all category for a reason to stop you. And that's not under the Fourth Amendment. You have the right to go freely on your way, unencumbered, without, you know, being hassled by the government. And he's saying that 0.6 arrest rate for the DWIs. So you're inconveniencing 100% of the drivers that pass by these roads for a 0.6% arrest rate. It's ludicrous. And then when they have these roving patrols, they're much more effective because they're actually observing the behaviors of the person while driving. And we're not even talking at this point about the immigration status. They just use that as a reason to stop people and talk to them. And then they, at the same point, they ask you your immigration status. And we'll be playing a clip here in a little bit of one of the, you know, encounters that Terry has with the Border Patrol. And even though you might think that he is being curt or being difficult with the officers, that's not the point. The point is he is exercising his rights as an American citizen under the protections afforded to him by the Fourth Amendment and the Constitution of the United States. These are, you know, William O. Douglas, who was the longest-serving Supreme Court justice there was, said the Constitution is not a document that is neutral. It is meant to keep the government off the people's back. When we get back, we'll talk about it a little bit more on the Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock Show. My name's Jet Lacy. We'll be right back.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Let's get ready to rumble!
Alrighty then. We are back on the Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock Show. My name's Jet Lacy. I'm sitting in, holding down the fort for Ernie while he's resting quietly in a sanitarium. Or maybe not. Maybe he's on vacation. I don't know. I think he was having a good time and he just didn't want to come home. And it's been really hot here. We're on the verge of getting the record here in Phoenix, Arizona for a number of 110 degree days. And, you know, I think he was gone to the Great White North. I'm not quite sure. He was sort of secretive about where he was going. But, you know, either way, it was north, which is a lot cooler than here. It rained last night, and it's going to be another 108-degree scorcher today. So, but, you know, I might be a little hot under the collar, but that's what we're talking about here. You know, we're talking about our rights, and we have every right to get hot under the collar when our rights are being taken away from us at an unprecedented rate. I'm also going to touch upon this article that was written by a gentleman that was on the show a couple weeks ago, or maybe even a week ago, named Alan Corwin, about the gun rights and what's going on here with what happened with Chris B. the other day. But I want to get back to the Terry Bressey situation, and I just want to use this as an example of how you can exercise your rights. You know, part of my job, I believe, here is to teach you. You know, you're not taught in school how to exercise your rights. They minimize it. And by exercising your rights, we'll talk to, when we talk to Ed Vallejo, that's something we'll talk about. This is his saying, rights are like muscles. If you don't use them, they atrophy. And that's one of the truest statements I've ever heard in my life. But Drew, if you don't mind popping up that clip, I'd appreciate it. Thanks, man.
All right, I'm being stopped. U.S. Border Patrol. What's your name, ma'am? What's your name, ma'am? What's your name, ma'am? You are being recorded right now. What's your name? I can hear you fine. Last name is what now?
Of what country are you a citizen?
What's the purpose of the stop?
Immigration checkpoint.
Okay, what's the scope of the stop?
Immigration checkpoint. Of what country are you a citizen?
Who do you work for?
U.S. Border Patrol.
Am I being detained?
No, I'm asking you a simple question.
Am I free to go?
I'm asking you a question. You need to answer my question.
Am I being detained?
You need to answer my question, sir.
Am I being detained?
Sir, you need to answer my question.
Am I being detained? I would like to go on my way if I'm not being detained. Am I being detained?
I'm
telling you. I'm asking you if I'm being detained.
I'm just asking you, for the purposes of an immigration, I need to ask you of what country you're a citizen.
Am I being detained?
I'm asking you, are you being, what country?
Am I free to go?
You need to answer my question.
Are you refusing to allow me to go on my way?
You know what? You need to answer my question.
Are you refusing to allow me to go on my way?
Secondary?
Are you refusing to allow me to go on my way?
Secondary?
Am I being detained?
I'm asking you to pull over to secondary.
Am I being detained?
Can you pull over to secondary, please?
Am I being detained?
I'm asking for the purposes of immigration. You need to pull over to...
Am I being detained?
Can you pull over to the secondary?
You've told me now that I'm not being detained. Am I free to go?
Sir, can you answer my question?
Am I being detained?
For the purposes of immigration, I need to ask you of what country you're a citizen.
You can ask me whatever you want. Am I being detained?
You are not being detained, sir.
Am I free to go? Okay, she's now looking around my vehicle. I'm free to go?
Have a good day.
What's your badge number?
You're free to go.
What's your badge number? And who's your supervisor?
We have a whole pile.
Who's your supervisor?
Miss Howe.
Miss Howe? Yes. Is she a Border Patrol agent?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
You have a great day.
You too.
See, you know, that is how you exercise your rights. You don't have to get violent. You don't have to do anything other than refuse to answer any questions to any authority anytime, unless there is probable cause. And someone just stopping you on the road for no particular reason is not probable cause. And to be honest, they've been fought over and over and over again. I can't believe that they're still out, but they are. And three-quarters of us, you know, three-quarters of American citizens live within 100 miles of the U.S. border. So that's just an incredible amount of people. So you're talking about, you know, what is it, 225 million of us out of the 300 million live within 100 miles of the border, and they can put up these checkpoints wherever they see fit. I just wanted to talk before the break. I'd really like to have some callers today. I enjoy that. I enjoy communicating with people of all, you know, different, you know, ideas. And the number is 1-800-313-9443 to call into the RBN line. That again is 1-800-313-9443. And we'll get you on the air. I'm not going to censor you. I don't do that. That's not how I roll. But if you wanted to talk about the warrantless checkpoints, that'd be great. If not, we'll talk about whatever you'd like to. We'll see you in a few minutes when we get back on the Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock Show with me, Jet Lacy, today.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Yeah, we're back on the Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock Show. My name is Jet Lacy, and I'm filling in for Ernie, admirably or not, I'm filling in. Anyway, again, the RBN call-in number is 1-800-313-9443. We're looking for callers, 1-800-313-9443. And we're getting back to Terry Bressy and these warrantless checkpoints. They're actually all over, and they, you know, most of the big deal has been made about the immigration ones, but there's other ones out there. You know, you have the DWI checkpoints that are allowed in various states. You have just basic checkpoints that are put out on the way from Phoenix to drive to Las Vegas. It's about a 5-hour drive. When you get to the just before the Hoover Dam, I don't know if it's a terrorism thing or whatever. Well, they have a checkpoint there too, and I'm not sure if that's even within 100 miles from the border. It's probably pretty close, but they do it anyway because the Hoover Dam is a national landmark and vehicles drive over it, and I don't know what they're doing there. But a couple of, my whole point of this is a couple of the ones that I've been over don't even have federal agents or state or city or tribal. They don't even have them manned by them. You know, it's just like what you see going on with the Blackwater situation, and it's something we're going to talk about a little bit later as well, that these are outside agencies, private companies, that are staffing some of these checkpoints. And one company is named Wacken Hut, and they're doing all kinds of stuff. Whether you want to believe it or not, they are, you know, creating FEMA camps for whatever reason. I don't know if they expect the you know, the flu virus or whatever, or a social uprising to come about. But Wacken Hut is one of the companies that's involved in creating and maintaining the buses that are going to bus each and every one of us to the FEMA camps if they so activate that. Anyway, I've seen Wacken Hut agents, which have no real, you know, military, government, political authority, stopping me and asking me what my citizenship is. I wonder, who are you to ask me what my citizenship is? You're just a regular Joe Bag of Donuts, as they say in New York, like me. And anyway, part of the thing, what I'm getting back to, is that Terry Bressy didn't always start. He didn't always know what his rights are. None of us do, you know, because, again, they're not always taught to us in school. And, in fact, I think they actively avoid it nowadays to teach you what to do and what your rights are. They want us to be a dumbed-down group of sheeple. That's what I call them, a sheeple that just follow, you know, the herd and do what we're told. And, again, like getting back to yesterday, if not, you get the bzz, 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 bzz of the taser. But anyway, I'm gonna play this clip right now, and it's Terry Bressy again discussing his first encounter. And he didn't have the equipment and the cameras and the cell, you know, the recording equipment that he has now. But he talks about this, his first stop, and how mortified he was, actually. And we got the clip up. Alrighty, here we go.
I was stopped at the primary stop location by a lieutenant with the tribal police. After I was stopped by the lieutenant, I asked him what the nature of the checkpoint was, and basically what was going on. And he responded by saying that this was a sobriety and a license check checkpoint. And of course, this seemed really strange to me because there was a U.S. Customs officer working the line with him, just a short distance away, along with Border Patrol agents further inside the checkpoint operation, and many federal law enforcement personnel that were present on the south side of the road. The next thing that the lieutenant asked me was he asked me for my driver's license. And at this point, I was concerned about the nature of the checkpoint, and it seemed to be far more expansive than what he had indicated. And I asked him if this checkpoint was being conducted on any sort of reasonable suspicion or probable cause that the people being stopped had violated any particular law. He responded by indicating that, no, the checkpoint was suspicionless, and he didn't have any reason to believe that any particular person had violated any particular law. So once again, he requested my driver's license for a second time, and then I narrowed in and I said, do you have any reason to believe that I've done something wrong or that my driver's license, for instance, may not be in order? And as I was talking to the lieutenant, he actually called over a detective with the tribal police to come and talk to me because his attention was now on something else that was taking place behind me. So a detective came present who had been listening to the conversation that I had had with the lieutenant, and he told me straight out, he said, I can tell from the way you're conversing that you haven't been drinking. Your eyes aren't bloodshot. I can't smell any alcohol coming from your breath or from inside the cab. So I don't have any concern about whether or not you've been driving impaired. He said, this area is known for illegal aliens and illegal narcotic smuggling, and consequently, everybody has to be identified before they're going to be allowed to pass through the checkpoint. So this detective had, if indeed this had been a sobriety checkpoint and was limited in scope to sobriety, then by the detective admitting that he had no reason to believe that I had been drinking after conversing with me, then at that point the stop, as it applied to me, should have ceased and I should have been waved through. But he made it very clear at this point that the scope of this checkpoint exceeded what the lieutenant had indicated it was when I first asked. And indeed, they were looking for illegal aliens and illegal narcotics as well. I indicated at this time that the Supreme Court had made a distinction between different types of checkpoints. And sobriety checkpoints, where drivers posed an immediate danger to the traveling public, would be considered permissible because they were addressing an immediate danger type of issue, whereas general law enforcement, where they're looking for things like drugs and other things of that nature, don't pose an immediate danger to the public. So therefore, reasonable suspicion or probable cause are needed to do a stop in the first place. And as I was relating these court cases to the law enforcement personnel, the federal agent who had a U.S. Customs vest and had been listening to the conversation as well, he pushed himself forward at this point. He actually kind of shoved some of the other tribal police officers out of the way so that he could get right up next to the driver's side door. And he told me at this point that in a very aggressive manner that I had better comply with the tribal police officers or I would be arrested for impeding a law enforcement operation. I, of course, was concerned that a federal agent had now approached me, and I turned to the lieutenant who had stopped me initially, and I asked him point blank. I said, what is the scope of this checkpoint? If this checkpoint is sobriety, why is there a federal agent that is now interacting with me? And at this point, the lieutenant indicated that this was indeed a joint task force operation that included not only the tribal police, but U.S. Customs and the Border Patrol as well. Another officer, I'm not sure who, asked me to pull my vehicle off to the side of the road. I turned back to the on-scene commander and I asked him if I was being detained. The on-scene commander said, no, you're not being detained. So I said, great, that must mean that I'm free to go. Is that correct? A third officer, who is named in the complaint at this point, used some derogatory terms and swear words, told me he had had enough of me and that I was to turn off the vehicle and get out now. So it was at this point where several of the officers put their hands on their guns and realizing that diplomacy had failed at this particular point, I turned off the vehicle, pulled the keys out of the ignition and put them in plain view and then put my hands up on the steering wheel so the officers wouldn't have any concerns with regards to what I was doing with my hands. And I sat there still. And the officers opened my door, undid my seatbelt, grabbed me around the armpits, pulled me out of the vehicle, laid me down on the ground, handcuffed my hands behind my back, and dragged me off to the side of the road.
Pretty chilling, isn't it? That's this is a multi-jurisdictional task force that was made up of the Border Patrol, Customs, other federal law enforcement agencies, and the tribal police that were originally, their scope had said that they were out for a DUI. That's what we have in Arizona is DUI. We don't have DWI, a checkpoint. And they admitted freely that it was a suspicionless checkpoint. And, you know, if you notice, even though Terry was aware of his rights, sort of, you know, he had a pretty good idea of what his rights were at that point. He still engaged the officers. And what you really should do is you have the right to remain silent. You can never forget that. You don't have to say anything that might possibly incriminate yourself. You don't have to give them any information, period. There's no other thing to say about that. You don't have to. But he still chose to engage them. And by engaging them, they use the information, you know, they form an opinion, they might get more incensed with whatever you say because you're just not following along with what they want. And the best thing to do is just keep your mouth shut, like the last clip before that, where he said, am I being detained? Am I being detained? Am I being detained? Refusing to answer their questions. And that's a natural progression when you end up start to learn what your rights are. Because, again, you have the right to remain silent, but anything you say can and will be used against you, regardless of whether you're under arrest or not. And these are really scary times. Just know that something that people just don't understand is that government equals force. The force at the end of a gun or whatever means of violence that they so choose to undertake, that is what government is. And you can set up a government like the founding fathers had originally intended, where the force of the government was to protect the individual from force or fraud. That was their only impetus for action. They had a very limited scope of what they were allowed to do. Secure the borders, coin money. There's not even supposed to be any paper money. You know, and protect the individual's rights. Read the Bill of Rights. I highly encourage you to read it again. As well as there's something else that Barry Hess, that was the host last week, taught me that they don't teach in the school books. The preamble to the Bill of Rights is not usually added in along with the rest of the Bill of Rights. And the preamble to the Bill of Rights actually paints one hell of a picture as to what the intent of those first 10 amendments to the Constitution entail. So what we have here with Terry is we have a sobriety checkpoint, an immigration checkpoint for illegal aliens. We have a narcotics checkpoint, and we have a catch-all checkpoint. The catch-all meaning that they're stopping everyone to see what they're up to and who they are and what their citizenship is. And do they look suspicious? Are they acting funny? Or do they have their tags in order? Whatever, you know. And that is expressly against the spirit of the Fourth Amendment to the Constitution. And so the thing I want to talk to you about mostly, sort of to, I don't know, I guess progress away from this borderless checkpoint, is that it's all backwards. The several states at the time of the Constitution created the federal government. It was the states that created the federal government. And nowadays, the federal government gets all the money from the states, and they only give a small portion of that money back from the taxation. And yet there's always something that goes along with it. You have the money that the states get back always have these little caveats and these little things that are, you know, that the states have to do, like these unfunded mandates. And, you know, or if you don't pass the seatbelt law, you don't get your highway funds and things like that. It's all, the whole thing has been turned over on its head, and it's not only scary, it's dangerous. And what I'm trying to impart to people here is that at what point do we stop being afraid of our government? At what point do we stop being afraid of what's going to happen to us if we stand up for our rights? At what point are we going to stop having fear? And that's what actually, you know, we'll talk about it again with Ed Vallejo. I have no fear anymore. And it's a beautiful, beautiful thing. It's liberating. You know, and we're talking about individual liberties, but when you stop being afraid of something, you are free from it. Again, like FDR said, the only thing we have to fear is fear itself. And that is so very true. When are we going to stop fearing what tomorrow brings? When are we going to stop being afraid of standing up for ourselves and our rights? You know, we have all these different angles of the media and everybody saying that, oh, if we don't do this, you know, there's going to be anarchy. If we don't pass these bailouts, there's going to be a collapse of the economy. If we don't pass health care, you know, the economy is going to collapse. And It's not true. These are things that are, that they're preying, P-R-E-Y, preying upon our fears. And when we stop having fears, we become free of the games and the lies that the government is telling us on a day-to-day basis. You know, and don't think for one second that the mainstream media is not a tool of the government. You know, you have GE owning NBC, and GE is one of the largest defense contractors in the United States and in the world. Do you think that GE is going to allow NBC to say anything that would affect their bottom line? Absolutely not. So what goes out the window at that point? Objective journalism. And when you don't have objective journalism, you have yellow or slanted journalism, which is meant to, you know, create a situation where they're trying to influence your behaviors and your opinions. And when you stop allowing yourself to be intimidated or have your opinion, you know, affected by these outside sources, my God, it's such a good feeling. And I hope that all of you can reach the same feeling that I've got. It's like, turn off your TV and start living your life without fear. You know, we'll be right back on the Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock show. We'll see you in a moment.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Yeah. We're back here on the Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock show. My name's Jet Lacy, and I'm your host. We're just having a good time here, me and Drew. Ed just showed up, and we're going to get to him at the top of the next hour. We just got 5 minutes here. Again, we have a call-in number, RBN 1-800-313-9443. I'd like to hear from anybody that wants to speak today. No matter how wacky or how fringe your topic that you want to speak on, I'd like to hear from you. Again, that's 1-800-313-9443. Just getting back to, you know, the borderless checkpoints, there's this whole progression of things that are going on in this government and in this country that people just don't understand. You know, there's 72 fusion centers around the country as well. In these fusion centers, there's this morphing that's going on between all levels of law enforcement, from the CIA, the FBI, the Department of Justice, the U.S. military, and all levels of local law enforcement that get together in these fusion centers and share information. And who do you think they're sharing the information about? They're sharing it about you and me and everybody. And here in Arizona, we have these cameras that are supposedly speed cameras, but they're not actually flash cameras. They are continuous rolling cameras that record every time someone goes by one of those. They have these automatic plate readers that runs your plates that can actually prove that at least that vehicle was in that location at that exact moment, and they do it thousands and thousands of times a day, every single car. They can run thousands an hour, and they do. And it's just this huge data mining that they go about taking the minutiae, the small information about you and where you are and what you're doing and what money you spend and where you go, and they just catalog it. And if they're trying to get something on you and they're trying to find something on you, they just have to go look and see where you were and what you spent and what you did and, you know, what your tendencies are, what websites you visit. And it's so scary. But you can't live like that with fear. These fusion centers, and like I said, there's 72 of them, you know, and they actually come out with certain documents, like the Missouri Information Analysis Center, which is the Missouri Fusion Center. They put the MIAC report out, which is Missouri Information Analysis Center report. And what that report says is that, you know, people like Ron Paul, Chuck Baldwin, Bob Barr supporters. You know, if you're not a fan of the mainstream media, I mean, the mainstream Republican, Republic Democrats, whatever you want to call it, they're all the same to me. If you're a pro-lifer, if you're a gun owner, if you're returning military, you might be a potential terrorist. And you know, they make it so broad that it, just about everybody could be considered a potential terrorist. People that display the Gadsden flag. That's the don't tread on me, the rattlesnake that was prevalent in the Revolutionary War. If you display that flag, you might be a terrorist. Hey, we could do a whole comedy series on these, just like Jeff Foxworthy. Like, you might be a terrorist if, say, you believe in that the New World Order is trying to usurp our government, or maybe, or they have. That's what I believe. I believe they already have. People that think the federal government is too big, you know, you might be a terrorist. And I fall into that list on almost everything except the military. I don't feel like a terrorist. I've never hurt a soul in my life. Anyway, what we're going to have Ed Vallejo on in the next hour, and I think it's going to be very interesting. It's someone I look up to in the freedom movement, and I think we're going to have a wonderful conversation, and I hope you're stick around to listen to it. And again, 1-800-313-9443. We'll be right back.